We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate, and Meditation Studio, the five-star app. I'm Patricia Karpis. Today's guest is Toni Bernhard. I loved talking with Toni. She's lived an extraordinary life and learned so much from the pain that she's had to endure. Toni's written four books: How to Live Well with Chronic Pain and Illness, How to Wake Up, a Buddhist-inspired guide for navigating joy and sorrow, How to Be Sick, and most recently, a pocket guide to the original version of How to Be Sick. What makes Toni unique is that she's been living with a chronic illness for over 20 years. In 2001, on a trip to Paris with her husband, actually, she was diagnosed with an acute viral infection and has never recovered. She lives with pain and fatigue every day and, as such, had to retire as a law professor at UC Davis. Toni had studied Buddhism before she became ill, but has taken a much deeper dive since her life took this unexpected turn. Her books share her story and are compilations of the wisdom and tools that have helped her cope with the physical and emotional challenges she continues to face. I actually found her to be uplifting, graceful, honest, and wise as she shared how she's navigated and accepted her life journey, for better and for worse. You'll hear how illness can be a metaphor for life and how we can all handle the mix of joys and sorrows that we inevitably face. Now, here's Toni. Toni, I am so happy to have you on Untangle today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm really glad to be here, Patricia. Thanks.
I wanted to start with, what inspired you to write this book, this very important book about how to be sick, how we handle being sick in life?
In 2001, my husband and I took a trip to Paris. We live in California, and this was a big deal for us. And the second day there, I got sick with a bad viral infection, of all things, which is what's on our minds today with COVID-19, I got this viral infection and I never recovered from it. So it's been over 19 years. We think that it compromised my immune system in some way so that it reads me as sick. And of course, back in 2010, I did all the round of specialists and actually spent about 10 years working on it, trying to figure out a diagnosis and what we could do. And at the time, I was teaching at UC Davis at the law school, and I had to leave. I was bedbound. So I took a semester off and then realized I just couldn't go back. So I had been a practicing Buddhist for 10 years when I got sick, and I had a very discipline meditation practice twice a day for 45 minutes each time. And other people will recognize when they've had a life-changing event, a traumatic event, doesn't necessarily have to be getting sick, that sometimes the very things in your life that have been helpful to you, you just put them aside. And so I put down all of the teachings of the Buddha that had been so helpful to me for 10 years because my focus was completely on what was wrong with me physically and I was filled with self-blame that I couldn't get well. When you get sick, you're supposed to get well. And I thought, I felt as if nobody understood and everyone was saying, well, why isn't she getting well? And I fell into a depression. And then one day, it's as if I think of it as the Buddha's teachings having been waiting in the wings for me to rediscover. And I actually took my computer, my laptop, pulled it over onto the bed, and opened a Word document and wrote, How to Be Sick, which is the name of the book. That's how it got that crazy name, because some people say, what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but a lot of people tell me they bought it because of the crazy title, but I never wanted to discard that because of how it came about. I opened it, I wrote How to Be Sick, and I actually thought, that's a nice idea, but I'm too sick to do anything about it. But gradually, I started writing using a lot of the Buddha's insights into the human condition. For example, the fact that illness is part of the human condition. It can happen to anyone at any age. It wasn't my fault. And instead of blaming myself, I let self-compassion into my life. Again, another one of Buddhism isn't alone in teaching compassion, but it is a very big part of Buddhist practice. And I really thought I was preparing this for myself, but I shared it with a couple people I'd met online who were chronically ill, and they said, this is a book. So I turned it into a book. I thought I would have to self-publish it, but Wisdom Publications, one of their authors, read the manuscript and said, I'm going to show this to my editor. And Wisdom really liked it. And now I've written 4 books.
It's so unique. I feel like people don't gravitate towards a book like this unless they're sick or they know someone who's sick. But there is so much wisdom for people who are feeling anything, anytime. I do want to go through what you call the challenges in your small companion guide. But I want to understand, so you got sick 19 years ago. And one of the things I was blown away by was that feeling of going to, I think you had 9 or 10 different diagnoses from doctors, and no one understood the illness. And I think people are so frustrated with the healthcare system right now. But I want to know, what was it like to deal with that, the doctors? And you mentioned in the book, this is so interesting, each doctor would feel like they've got the solution, and then you'd get really excited and they wouldn't have the solution, and then you'd be really disappointed. And so I just can't even imagine going up and down on that journey and then never wanting to give up but not wanting to participate. It must be so hard.
It is really hard. I have a wonderful GP, and what he knew to do was to refer me because to every specialist he could think of. I mean, I saw 2 infectious disease doctors and endocrinologists and cardiologists and neurologists, and I could go on, rheumatologists, and alternative medicine, maybe 5 acupuncturists and herbalists. And every time I would get my hopes up, because some of the doctors would say, well, we'll order these tests, and then we'll know what's wrong, and I'll fix you.
Right. I'll fix you.
Yeah. The tests would come back. Nothing showed up on blood work or MRIs, CT scans. And they would say, go back to your primary care physician. And so what I called this in the book, the hot potato treatment, where you keep throwing it to the next person. And what I've discovered, it's been 10 years since that first book came out, and it has a worldwide distribution, and I get emails from people all over the world. I had an email from a pharmacist in Iraq. I mean, it's really amazing. And we've had a lot of similar experiences. And let me also say that the endocrinologist I saw said, I'm not sure that I can find out what's going on, but I'll do my best. And I appreciated her so much because she was honest with me. She didn't say, I'm going to fix you. And she ordered a lot of tests and didn't come back with anything and was really honest with me. And one thing that when I started to put the Buddhist teachings to use again, I discovered the deep value of having a balanced mind state known in Buddhism as equanimity. And this realization, this understanding that with all things in life, sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. And if you go into any endeavor, and just going to take a little tangent here, you were saying you thought the book might be helpful to people who aren't sick. Well, a lot of people who are perfectly healthy love that book. They tell me illness is a metaphor for all of life's problems. And you don't have to be Buddhist either, because it's not a religious book. It's a practical book. So when you go into any new endeavor, whether it be connected to illness or not, just this recognition that life is a mix of joys and sorrows, and sometimes things work out and sometimes they don't. And when you can start living that way, then you're not constantly having these wild ups and wild downs, which aren't good for you physically or mentally. It's like you're just a ship at sea being thrown around without any control over your emotions. So it was hard, but I have certain practices that really helped me through that. And one of them is this recognition that life is a mixed bag. I don't know anyone who hasn't experienced suffering. And I don't know anyone who hasn't experienced joy or contentment. So we can work toward, we can try to generate more joy and contentment in our lives. And that's really beneficial. But the fact is, it's not always going to be that way. And it's hard. But it's also part of understanding that life is unpredictable and that we have very little control over what happens. I like to say that the one thing we can control is the way we treat ourselves.
And I really like that you just said illness is a metaphor for all of life's problems, because when I look at the themes in your companion guide, not engaging in self-blame, making peace with your inability to know what the future holds. I think that's what we're all dealing with right now. And then you have responding skillfully to the relentlessness of symptoms. And if you exchange the word symptoms for challenges.
Absolutely, yeah. How about the relentlessness of sheltering in place?
Yeah.
I've certainly had to come to terms with that. The sameness, the lack of variety in life. Yeah.
Has that changed a lot for you? Because I know with your illness, you are home a lot. And has the COVID situation, I guess, in terms of people visiting you, that's been really difficult.
It's interesting that there's been some sharing on the web with people who are chronically ill, which includes chronic pain and include chronic mental health issues like PTSD and that kind of thing. But with chronic illness, as some people have said to me, well, you were home anyway. It's very different because the choice is gone. I am home most of the time. But if there was a day when I felt well enough, sometimes my husband and I would go out to eat, and well, we don't do that. And then there's the difference in the environment of the two of us being home all the time. There are a lot of articles on the web I've seen. I don't usually read them, but I see the titles about loneliness being such a big problem right now for people. And you tend to think they're talking about all the people who live by themselves. But it turns out that people who live with others are also experiencing a kind of loneliness because they've lost the ability to choose who you want to hang out with.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
And I have a wonderful relationship with my husband. I'm really glad that we're together here. And yet I'm not able, I feel this loneliness, this emptiness sometimes because I can't seem in person my good friends and my children. So yeah, it's hard.
I wanted to ask this question, and this comes out of your book, what are the tools that are most important to gracefully accept what is here in our world right now? And with your chronic illness, it's what's here in your body right now. What are some tools that you would recommend?
I find it helpful to, I have a lot of tools, obviously. That's what the book is. It's all tools to help with various things. So I could come at this from several angles. One is the acceptance, working on accepting that one of life's characteristics is uncertainty and unpredictability. That means that there's a lot that we don't control. And if making peace with that lack of control and with that uncertainty is one of the practices, because we don't know, we all thought by July we'd be back to our old lives. And now we have no idea how long this is going to go on. And so it's very helpful to recognize that life is full of uncertainty, and this is yet another one. And related to this is the fact that if other people are like me, they're very good at worrying. And so I can go down this path of worry, the big worry about the world and what's happening with the economy and what is the new world going to look like. And then there's worrying about my kids and their jobs and worrying about my grandchildren. So it's a real challenge, and I can work myself up into these stressful thoughts. And so several of the techniques in the book, the purpose of them is to bring you into the present moment. What's going on right now? Because worrying is so fruitless. It increases stress, which actually is felt in the body and can make symptoms worse if you do have any kind of health issues. And it's certainly not good for the mind. It can affect your sleep and just affect how you are every day. So some of these practices, one of them that people seem to love is I call three breath practice, where throughout the day, you just remember to do it. You can do it. And there's no limit to how often you can do it. You stop whatever you're doing and you just pay attention to the physical sensation of 3 in-breaths and 3 out-breaths. 3 in, out, in, out. And you feel that in your body. And some people feel the breath in their nostrils. Some people feel it in their abdomen. Some people feel it in their whole body. It doesn't matter. The main thing is your breathing is in the present moment. So what that does is bring you into the present and out of all of those stressful stories and the worrying and the wondering how long will this go on. And if you're having trouble with symptoms and you start telling yourself, I'll always be in pain. Well, you don't know that. And so you bring yourself into the moment with these three breaths, and it's amazingly soothing. And what I find is that when I do it, there's always something pleasant presenting itself to my senses. I have a beautiful print on the wall, and I might look at that, or I hear a bird, or it brings you into the moment. I have another practice that does the same thing, which is a little different, but it has the same effect when you realize that I call it off in la la land. And it doesn't have to be worry. It could be restlessness. It could be frustration over another day when I can't go out. And then you go off onto your stories about how awful this is. The practice is called drop it. And I gently but firmly say to myself, drop it. And then I do the same thing as with three breath. I look around me and bring myself into the present. And when you do that, it's just amazing how you realize that all of those stories and churned up emotions, whether it's anger, frustration, or some story trip you've gone off on about the future, they're gone. And here you are in the moment. And it's very calming. It's very helpful.
Will you talk about the broken glass practice?
Yeah. Actually, I didn't put that in the little pocket companion, but it's one of my favorite practices. And it's in the big book, How to Be Sick. And it comes from a teacher who I consider one of my root teachers in Buddhism, but I never met him. His name was Achan Cha, and he was a Thai forest monk. So he was a forest monk in Thailand. And several of the popular current Buddhist teachers in the States, well, worldwide, I guess, like Jack Kornfield and several other people, at some point spent time with him in this forest monastery and then transcribed his talks into English. So there are a bunch of his books. And he has this practice called broken glass practice, which is really something that reminds us of one of life's characteristics, which is impermanence. And impermanence implies, I have to go back to this, uncertainty, unpredictability. And this practice came about because Achan Cha was in his little monk's hut, and one of his students brought him a cup of tea, and he reached out to get the cup of tea, and the exchange didn't work, and the glass fell and broke all over the bottom of the hut. And Achan Cha said, don't worry, it was already broken. And I have taken that practice as a way of saying, my husband and I sometimes joke, when things don't work out the way we want them to, we say, it was already broken, meaning it was already subject to change, which is what impermanence means. Constant change. That is a universal law. That is not a Buddhist law. It's universal to all spiritual and humanitarian paths. Change is the law of the universe. And so it's just a practice that's been very helpful. So when I think of my body having become sick 19 years ago, I can actually say to myself with deep compassion, it was already broken, because bodies are subject to illness and aging. That's right in the Buddha's First Noble Truth. He has this list of things that we're all subject to. One of them is that there's illness, there's aging, there's being separated from the people you love, whether it's by death or by geography, not getting what you want, getting what you don't want. All of these things are part of life. So this is just a practice for me, this broken glass practice of being able to say everything is already broken in the sense that it has its lifespan. And my husband and I do this as more of a fun thing, but it's also deep at the same time. And the only thing I would add is that I like to add to it, because whatever you're thinking about is already broken, be sure to take good care of it when it's not broken.
It's funny, when I first went to a Buddhist class many, many years ago, and the first thing that the teacher said was, we're all subject to age, illness, and death. And I thought, what a bummer, I'm leaving. I don't want to hear about these things now.
It's great that you say that, Patricia, because in the third chapter of How to Be Sick, I titled it, The Buddha Tells It Like It Is. I go to that, to what you're saying this Buddhist teacher said, because that's in the First Noble Truth. And I call it the Buddha's list. And it's the Buddha's list of unpleasant experiences that are just part of the human condition. And I love that on the list is not getting what you want and getting what you don't want, because it's as if he said, and I'm just putting words in his mouth, of course, it's as if he said, and if I left anything off the list, how about this? Because that covers everything.
It does. It does.
When after those dark years of being sick and blaming myself and feeling frustrated, I looked at that First Noble Truth and I thought, oh my gosh, the Buddha understands what I'm going through. And I found it, I know what you mean about saying, what a bummer, because people say to me, isn't Buddhism pessimistic? Well, no. To me, I want to know what to expect in life. And when I saw that list and I saw illness on that list, I'm not a person who bows down, but I just wanted to bow down to the Buddha and say, thank you for, in a way, like I say, telling it like it is, so I know what to expect in life. And I don't blame myself because I got sick. Illness and pain, physical pain, and they're all just part of the human condition. So I know what you mean about that negative reaction, but I turned that around. And that's what this chapter 3 is about, is how much I appreciate that he described life the way it really is, instead of painting over everything and saying, just be positive. Everything's going to be great all the time. I mean, I don't know anyone whose life is like that.
No. Let me ask you another question then, because our lives aren't like that.
My name's Dwayne Osterlin. I'm host of the Addicted Mind podcast. Are you ready to uncover the science of breaking addiction? Then join me on the Addicted Mind, where compassion meets innovation. We're going to explore real stories of addiction recovery, hear from real experts on science-based treatment, and you'll be able to equip yourself with the tools for lasting change. So whether you're on the road to recovery yourself or walking alongside someone who is, the Addicted Mind podcast is your companion. So check it out. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now and be part of the conversation that's changing lives.
You also talk in your books about finding joy when you are feeling miserable. And I do think that there's a lot that we cope with, right? We cope with the uncertainty, making room for fear of whatever might happen, dealing with what's here right now in your physical body when it feels terrible. So how do you find joy when you're miserable?
That's an interesting question, Patricia, because there are some days when I don't find joy, but I still practice equanimity by saying, okay, this is a day when I'm feeling really sick physically, or maybe this is a day when I'm feeling really down mentally. And I'm able to say, that's what this day is like. And this may not be a happy day for me, and that's okay. And then I look for things that might let a little bit of light in. Everyone has some things, maybe some music, maybe a hot bath, maybe a hot drink of some kind. And what that's about is self-compassion. So if it's a really rough day, the way that I get to joy is through self-compassion. The way I teach self-compassion is very specifically, because the word compassion is like the word mindfulness these days. It's so used that it's to some extent losing its value, because you say, just be self-compassionate. And well, what does that mean? So I can tell you what it means. To me, it just means being nice to yourself, being as nice to yourself as you'd be to a loved one who was in need. And the way I suggest people do that to make it really work is to come up with phrases that speak directly to the suffering they're experiencing. So I'll just go with what you mentioned, which is a day where symptoms are relentless, or it could be for people where sheltering in place is relentless, and saying something like, this is really hard. And I don't usually speak it out loud, but there's no reason you couldn't, or say it in a soft voice. Something like, not being able to see my friends in person is really hard. I'm struggling today. And there's something about touching your pain that way that opens your heart and makes you feel better. It may not be joy, but there's acceptance and contentment and sense of, let me put it this way, when you speak to yourself in that way, touching on what's really troubling you and how hard it is, it's as if you're telling yourself that you understand your own suffering. And doing that alleviates it, because what is a better way to alleviate suffering and pain than to acknowledge that that's what you're feeling? Rather than wallpaper it over with fake joy. And sometimes that can lead to joy. I'm not saying it can't, but that moment of self-compassion, oh, I'm just feel so sick today. It's really hard. And no wonder it's difficult. Life can be difficult at times. I'm doing the best I can. My body is working so hard to try to make me feel better. Those are the kinds of things I say to myself. And you can do this about anything. You can do it about, these days you might attend it on Zoom, but someone at work, that meeting was so difficult. I felt as if I wasn't able to express myself the way I wanted to. That happens sometimes. I did the best I could. I don't find any value in self-blame. It doesn't mean you can't learn from your mistakes, or learn and say to yourself, maybe at the next meeting, I'll try introducing what I want to say this way. You can be constructive in figuring out how you might do something better. To me, that's completely different than blaming yourself. You know, what an idiot. I can never say the right things. I've said that to myself. I don't say it to myself anymore, though, because I've worked hard to replace that with self-compassion. So instead of saying, I'm an idiot, I never say the right things, I'll say, wow, I wish I'd said yada yada, but it's always hard to just come up with the perfect thing at the moment. I did the best I could.
Yeah.
It's such a difference.
It does make a difference. And I like that you use the word worked. You worked hard to replace the language, because I do think it's hard work. You're changing a habit. You're changing an autopilot behavior. I want to ask you something because it sounds like you're very good at speaking with yourself. You've learned so many skills through Buddhism and through living with your illness for the last 19 or 20 years, and you've made peace in some ways with how to self-soothe. But what advice would you give to other people on how to react more gracefully to you being ill for so many years? And also for people that you don't look sick sometimes, they may have no idea of how sick you are. You have talked in your book about feeling judged sometimes. What advice would you give for other people?
This is a real problem for many, many people who suffer from chronic illness, be it mental or physical or pain. We look fine to others. And so people will say, but you don't look sick. They usually mean it in the nicest way. It's not really kind to say back to them, well, I am really sick. Because people are trying to be nice. They'll say to me, oh, you look terrific today. So a couple things. I've learned that when people speak that way, it's out of ignorance. Their intentions are good. So rather than say something biting back to them, I usually just say, thank you. And then if they want to pursue it more and they really are interested, I will explain to them how difficult it is for people with health problems because they tend to look fine. So one of the things that I suggest in the bigger picture for people with chronic pain and illness is to try to educate family and friends about what's going on with you. And then the big step is recognizing that some people will never understand. And to be able to wish them well and go upon your journey. I've had several friends just drop out of my life. And it's an expression that people use online in chronic illness groups. They'll say, my friends have gone missing. And what happened to me, I was very resentful until I realized that it wasn't that they disliked me. It was about them. They're uncomfortable around illness. Maybe it reminds them of their own mortality. This culture does a very poor job of talking about the realities of life. That's why so many people are going about their business now. So what I've learned is, and I tell people, try to stick with the people who understand. And to those who don't understand, wish them well, because it's not that they don't wish you well and wish that you wouldn't recover. It's that they don't know how to be with people who are ill. And one of the things I say in the introduction to this Pocket Companion is there's a lot about life we can't control, including other people, but we can work on how we respond. If you always respond with anger, you become an angry person. If you always respond with resentment, you become a resentful person. And that doesn't make for a happy life. You were talking earlier about how do you bring joy into your life. One way is to change the way you react to the conditions that are presented to you. Mindfulness is very helpful. We haven't talked about that, but the practices I said that bring you to the present moment, the drop it and the three breath, that gives you the opportunity to be mindful and to see, wow, this anger is only making me feel worse. And to see that life is the way it is. So you have to take the life you have and find peace and joy within it.
My next question was about loss of so much freedom, which you have with your chronic illness and we have with COVID. How has that loss impacted your identity Let's talk about that briefly, pre-chronic illness and now today, like your identity as Toni Bernhard.
When I got sick, I was a law professor. I thought I'd be doing that right now, 20 years later. I had done a stint in the dean's office as a dean of students, and there's nothing like being a dean of students to make you want to go back to teaching. I mean, it's the best job I ever had, but it was the hardest. And so I had gone back to teaching and I was loving it. And I thought, I just assumed I'd be doing it now, 20 years later. And when I couldn't continue at work. I talked about how I went through this dark period. And what I didn't mention is that a lot of that dark period had to do with loss of identity, because I thought, if I'm not a law professor, who am I? And my kids were grown and they weren't living at home. So I didn't have mother duties, except to the extent that you're still mothering your kids, even when they don't live with you. But it wasn't a day-to-day thing. And I was in a panic over this loss of identity. And one of the big breakthroughs for me was to be okay with that, to just have this floating sense of who I am. So, for example, right now, okay, I've written 4 books. So I could take on the identity Toni Bernhard, author, and that would pump me up. But that's a passing, everything is changing. And so I don't want to hold on to that identity. I am content to let each day present itself. And my goal each day is to be kind to myself and to be kind to others. I talked a lot about self-compassion, but I didn't talk about the joy that comes from helping other people. We may think it's harder now, but there's just a lot of little things you can do. Someone sent me a card the other day, just out of kindness, and another friend left flowers on my patio, just out of kindness. And I find that when I'm kind to others, that brings me joy. So I'm content to not know who I am. And the reason I'm content is that I realized that clinging to that identity of law professor when it wasn't in the cards anymore was a deep source of suffering for me. And thank goodness I saw that, because when I let go of it, I just felt this flood of, it's like I put down a burden, and it was like, okay, now I have a new life. It helps to recognize when you're clinging to an identity that may no longer be serving you well, and it actually might be mother, if you're being overly protective of your 40-year-old kid, right?
Yeah.
It could be any identity. So it's just something to look at. And again, those practices that bring you into the present moment, that's a moment of mindfulness that gives you the opportunity to look at what you might be clinging to that is not serving you well. And what I mean by that, that is a source of suffering for you.
Yeah, that is such precious advice. Thank you, Toni. Thank you so much for being on Untangled today. I could talk to you forever. You have so much wisdom for people who are chronic illness sufferers and for all of us. So I'm just so grateful you were able to make the time today.
I really enjoyed it, Patricia. You asked great questions.
Thank you. Thanks so much to Toni for joining us today. You can find out more about her at her website, tonibernhard.com, and all her books are available at Amazon. If you want to try the Muse headband for learning or deepening your meditation practice and getting a better night's sleep, check it out at choosemuse.com. And if you have questions or suggestions, send them to untangle@choosemuse.com. As always, it has been great to have you with us this week, and we will see you next week. We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Bourne shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bourneshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.